Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com, previewing the not very small matter of Chelsea versus Arsenal at King's Meadow on Friday night. I don't know about the rest of you listening to this, but I've been laying awake at night thinking about this game for quite a long time now. It's had a big red circle around it in the calendar for several months, and now it's nearly here. I'll be frank with you, I'm shitting myself, to be honest, but we felt such a big game. And let's set the scene for this game. So for those of you who don't know, Arsenal are 2 points clear at the top of the WSL with Chelsea in second. Chelsea have a game in hand. So that tells you what a big game this is. So if Arsenal win this and they can put a 5-point cushion back to Chelsea, albeit having played a game more, then you probably make Arsenal favourites for the title from there. A draw, you probably marginally make Chelsea favourites because it's in their hands. A Chelsea victory, and I think you make Chelsea quite big favourites. So it's a massive, massive game. And from Arsenal's perspective, I think a must-not-lose game. Probably for both teams, actually, a must-not-lose game. However, having set the scene, let's introduce some of the main characters that we're going to talk about this game with. So first of all, as ever, our reliable co-hosts, Alex Ibaceta, who you can follow on Twitter at AlexIbaceta23. Alex, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm shitting myself too.
Yes, yeah. I think that might even be the title of the podcast. We'll see if we can get that past Apple and Spotify. And giving us the Chelsea perspective, you might remember we had Jesse on just before the FA Cup final between these two teams in December, and we decided that worked, that turned out to be such a good omen for Arsenal that we'd repeat the experiment. So please welcome Jesse Parker Humphreys, who you can follow on Twitter at JesseJPH. Jesse, how are you doing?
I'm glad that everyone on the Arsenal side is shitting themselves, because I'm on the Chelsea side and I feel exactly the same.
Yes, this is an absolute no holds barred for both teams. I think it's the kind of game I'd probably love to watch as a neutral. It's I'd liken this game to a penalty shootout, like great fun unless you're involved. And if you're involved, do you know what? I've had like the what's the song called? The Tribulator, like going around in my head. Harry and the All Stars, just going around in my head, because that music. I used to love that song, but it makes me feel sick because. With nerves, I should say, because that's the song that Chelsea play when the teams come out of the tunnel. Chelsea men and women play that. So that's always a signal to me to be very, very anxious. But nevertheless, Jesse, if we start with you on the kind of Chelsea side, obviously there was the cup final. Well, I have to reluctantly acknowledge that the cup final was a thing that happened back in December. And actually what was kind of weird was that really started a spell of quite indifferent form for both teams. There was a few games there after that where, you know, our good friend Sophie Lawson on Twitter just kept like tweeting, what did this game do to you guys afterwards? So from a Chelsea perspective, Jesse, what in your view did happen with Chelsea in those kind of weeks immediately after winning the FA Cup?
Yeah, spare a thought for this journalist who wrote a piece after that game saying, oh, this is a great opportunity for Chelsea to kick on and really like extend their season. I think, you know, as with most of these kind of things, there's no real neat answer for what went on in the kind of, I'm going to say, 5 or 6 games that took place in December into January for Chelsea. I think there's a couple where Chelsea played well and were unlucky. I think the 0-0 against Juventus and the 0-0 against Brighton, both of those games, I thought really they were in inverted commas, one of those days matches where Chelsea just has more than enough chances and some very good goalkeeping performances basically meant it didn't happen for them. I think Chelsea obviously lost to Reading and Wolfsburg in that time period as well. And I think those games were a bit different. I felt like Reading, a bit the nature of the concession so early on in the match really allowed them to just sit back. You know, if you look at some of Chelsea's good opportunities in that game, Reading have literally managed to put like four players on their goal line to defend against them. So it's just like a totally crazy like game state situation. But I also didn't think Chelsea did that much to create good opportunities. And I think that was a bit of, you know, Hayes has been a bit strange in some of her rotations this season, real like wholesale five players out, five players in changes. And that felt like one of those moments where none of the players really gelled and it wasn't really a high quality first half in particular. And that then the panic set in. The Wolfsburg game, I think similarly, it just like was a real panic set in moment. But I think something that was really not missed in the analysis of it, but Ann-Katrin Berger missed that game because she contracted COVID. And I think as much as I really admire Zakira Musovic as a goalkeeper, I think for three of the four goals, you can put quite a lot on her. And I think, again, that would have been a different match if Berger had been there. It sounds like I feel like I'm reeling a lot of excuses out, but I just think, you know, and I'm sure from an Arsenal perspective, when you look at the chunk of games that took place for you guys after that time, it's a similar story. You know, it's not a simple, easy explanation. Like, this is what happened and there's an easy fix. Like, each of those games had individual factors. But yeah, it was a frustrating one to watch anyway, because I did really feel like after that FA Cup win, that was like the moment where we should have kicked on and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, I also think we underestimate the extent to which that was a strange period with COVID as well, and with so many COVID cases. And I think both teams kind of suffered with that. And Arsenal had this like drip of COVID cases. They didn't have like a big outbreak. They just had two or three players out every week with it. And we know that when Chelsea went to Wolfsburg, for example, I think Emma Hayes, some would say, too open about the physical state of some of her players. But, you know, that she said that a lot of them were kind of struggling a little bit with illness. And, you know, Melanie Leupold's still struggling with COVID, has long COVID, not going to the Arnold Clark Cup. So I do think that maybe we underestimate what a strange period that was to play football in. But let's move away, I guess, from soft factors and to more tactical factors. When we were talking before the cup final, we were talking about whether Chelsea would continue with the back three that they'd played to that point for most of the season. Now, in the cup final, what was really interesting was that Chelsea was switching between a three and a four. And then we had that interesting situation where Jonas Eidevall was holding up blue and red cards from the dugout because he had like two different game plans. Has to be said, I don't think either of them really worked in the end, according to the formation shift. But it looks to me like Chelsea have gone back to a back four fairly solidly now. Is that fair? And are you happy with that change?
Yeah, I think the back four seems to be fairly set in, at least for now. I do wonder whether we will see a return to the back three when Magda Eriksson comes back to full fitness, just because, you know, Anik Nouwen's come in, she's had to play all these games. She's looked pretty good, to be honest, for most of it. So whether Hayes would be interested in exploring that with three actual centre-backs rather than just shoving Jess Carter in the middle, I think that would be interesting to look at. But that being said, I think Chelsea look a lot more settled and a lot more familiar with the back four. I definitely think, you know, that Wolfsburg game, again, was this weird, like, kind of shifting back three to back four, and Wolfsburg were really able to exploit the flanks as a result of that. You know, Magda Eriksson was the ostensible, like, left back in that situation slash left-sided centre-back, and it was just, like, really easy to pull Chelsea all the way across each side of the pitch. So I think that's why the back four has kind of returned. But that being said, none of the things that caused Emma Hayes to move away from the back four have changed. E.g., Emma Hayes doesn't think she's got elite level fullbacks, and I would agree with her. So for me, that's still a bit of a red flag. We've just kind of seen Jess Carter deal pretty well with Lauren Hemp at the weekend, obviously. So that's a good sign for her playing right back. And Jonna Andersson has been rediscovered at left back, which, you know, the way Hayes talks about it honestly makes me laugh so much. You'd think, you know, Jonna had been like in a cupboard and Hayes had forgotten she was there. And she's like, oh my God, I've got a left back to play all of a sudden. But yeah, that's, I think that's still a bit of a question mark for me, because I'm just like, I don't really see what you think has changed to allow you to suddenly feel confident with this defensive formation that you so obviously issued for the first half of the season.
Yeah, I like that description of John Anderson, a bit like a £5 note you find in an old coat that you haven't worn for a few months. Just before I move across to Alex to get an Arsenal perspective, it seems to me, again, as an outsider to all of this, that, and look, I want to be careful about calling this progress, because the fact where Chelsea are, they have to win silverware to call a season successful. If they don't, it's not. That's just where Chelsea are. So, but assuming Chelsea do win silverware this season and do achieve like at least some of their targets, it seems to me that one of Hayes' successes, kind of tactically, there's a lot of talk about, you know, accommodating talent like Harder and Kerr and Kirby and how you get them together. But what's really interested me is how she's remoulded players like Jess Carter, like Guro Wrighton, who's played as a wing back and does lots of different things depending on the game. Jess Fleming as well, who I think is just one of the most fascinating players in the world, because for Chelsea and for Canada, she just seems to have this, like, it sounds like I'm doing a down, but this fill-in role that's just like, I will either go in midfield or up front and I will do all the things that mean that everyone else has total freedom. And it seems to me that, like, remoulding some of those players who maybe some of us thought wouldn't have a future at Chelsea anymore, it is one of her kind of, I guess, tactical successes. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, although I will say with the caveat of that, I think it's a very interesting situation where it feels like only by the absence of certain players has there been the possibility of doing that. So again, I'm still very interested to see how, as the rest of the season plays out, as some more of those players come back, whether it gets stuck with, whether those players get left on the bench. You know, like, I think Erin Cuthbert has been like the pinnacle of that. I think we've always known Erin Cuthbert as a very versatile player, but I think she's looked fantastic in central midfield with Sophie Ingle. In fact, much better than she, I think, has at wing back sometimes, where I've been a bit unsure of how well she can actually deal with that threat on the flank. But I think that central midfield role really suits her tenacity. But she's only there because Loi Potts has long COVID, as you mentioned, and Jisoo-Yun's been at the Asia Cup. So is Hayes going to leave those two players on the bench in favour of sticking with Ingle and Erin Cuthbert? You know, that seems hard for me to believe. So I think whilst, you know, she's made it work, I honestly just couldn't tell you what the long-term future of that is. And I think to the other point is to whether that allows Harder, Kirby and Kerr to fit in. Again, it's almost as if she's decided, because of kind of absence and lack of form, that she's not going to try and fit all three of them in right now. That only two of them are playing. You know, we saw Harder and Kirby, obviously, whilst Kerr was away at the Asian Cup, Kerr's come back and Kirby was dropped for the City game. And I think that's kind of fair, because I think, you know, as much as I think Fran's a fantastic player, I think the past month or so, we've really not seen the best of her, unfortunately. And again, that will be an interesting thing. If Hayes feels like, you know, she's gone back to the 4-4-2, and a 4-4-2 is a formation that I think is really something that Hayes has enjoyed throughout her career. I think she's often seen her best success with Chelsea when she's been playing in that formation. You know, does she hold on to that and choose to sacrifice one of those three players kind of once a week to make it work? Or does she go back to trying to once again shoehorn them into a system which maybe doesn't suit the rest of the squad? I just genuinely don't know.
Yeah, it's quite interesting with Chelsea, like when they post their lineups, not least because they post them in number order and not formation. Quite often, I'm, you know, the first 10 minutes of watching a Chelsea game for me is who's playing where here and who's doing what. And, you know, Emma tends to be quite adaptable in the way she kind of approaches things. But also mentioning Erin Cuthbert there, I think it's a travesty that Katie McCabe's suspension, shock suspension, it must be said, has deprived us of Cuthbert McCabe beef, which is one of the main courses of any Arsenal Chelsea game. Alex, I'll come to you for a bit more of an Arsenal perspective. Just to ask you how you see this game going, because absent the cup final, and Lord knows we would all like to absent the cup final from our minds forever, Arsenal have actually been much better in these big games this season. So they've taken 4 points off City, 4 points off United, beat Chelsea at home. However, I think we both know that that was a very different Chelsea back in September, and probably a slightly different Arsenal as well. How do you see this game going?
It's a hard one because I think it goes way past the tactics and the formations beyond that. I think Arsenal have been in a slump, and we all know that. It's very blunt. Whether it be mentally, personally, just off the pitch stuff, I don't think they have like the bite and the drive that they did at the start of the season. For the first half of the season, obviously leading up to that unfortunate cup final. So I think it depends just how motivated the players are. I think obviously personnel, Lee Williamson being back will be big. Obviously having Tobin, as we mentioned, you know, having those 1v1s with a less than amazing fullback at Chelsea could be really big. And the overload that we know that works, you know, having Beth Mead potentially on the other side, it just works for Arsenal. But it's very dependent on the injuries and how like fit these players are. So that's kind of, we're not going to know until the day of who plays where and who's fit enough to play for how long. But I think what Arsenal need beyond tactics is the mentality. I think once, because Chelsea do have that over Arsenal. I think I've always said that Chelsea just have a mentality that you can't really match up to. So should Chelsea go up one goal early, like they did against Man City, I think that's going to be way harder to climb back, and not just because of scoring, but because of the mentality that Chelsea have to hold on to that. So I think Arsenal just need to show up on the day, no matter who's on the pitch, no matter the tactics. You know, if we have Viv as a 10, that would be great. But I think regardless of tactics and who plays where, I think the mentality that Arsenal need to show in this game is going to be big. And I think that's going to potentially be even bigger than the football that they play.
Yeah. I think the thing is as well, particularly with Chelsea, I tweeted it after full time with the Chelsea Man City game. Overall, a pretty even game. I just, even when City were putting the squeeze on in the last 20 minutes, I just thought Chelsea are going to see this out, because Chelsea always see this out, particularly at home. I think they know, they have that muscle memory of getting over the line in these big games, particularly at King's Meadow. Initially, we had in the running order, I was going to ask you about who should partner Hafaeli in the event that Leah Williamson couldn't play. But we spoke to Jonas Eidevall today, and I mean, he said he's hopeful about Leah. And that to me means that if she's in a wheelchair, she plays, quite frankly. And with the international break coming up, I don't think Jonas will care too much if she can't play for England. No, I'm sure he will for the player's sake, but I think maybe she could have played the United game, but he was really saving her for this game. And I think for the United game, not having our first, you know, having a makeshift centre-back pairing, particularly early in the game, was pretty damaging, actually, overall. And having Leah and Hafaeli together, that's just a partnership that just needs to go now, because I think it's got the great makings. But I think Leah's going to play is the short answer there. So a question I asked Jonas today was about the, you know, the Viv Stinius link up, which we saw in the equaliser for the game against Manchester United. And when we signed Black Stinius, one of the things I asked Jonas, I asked him about the potential of them playing together. And he said, yep, I'd be happy to drop Viv into the 10 and play her a little bit deeper. I'd be happy to play them as two nines. But the other thing he said was he felt that they could have a good link up because Black Stinius is so good at running in behind. And that's exactly what we saw. I mean, to be fair, the pass was begging for a goal, really. But we really saw that with Black Stinius. And I wonder, I asked him today, but he wasn't very forthcoming on whether that's a plan B option. Because just because that worked from the bench when we were chasing a game, it doesn't necessarily mean it would work from the start. But I kind of, you know, I said, would you be willing to start with those two in a game like this? To which he joked, obviously, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do on Friday night. But would you, I mean, first of all, would you be tempted in this game to start them both? And do you think that that it's like it's a plan A that Arsenal could have? Or do you think it's just one of those things, if Arsenal need a goal with 20 minutes to go, do it?
It's a hard one to think, because I do agree that it was potentially more, it impacted the game more because it came off the bench. And I think in a game like Chelsea, who, let's say it's 0-0 in the 75th minute, Chelsea are better off with the draw and they know they can see out the game, even maybe get a goal, and you put that on and they produce magic like that again, it's a possibility. But at the same time, when you look at the strengths and weaknesses of the Chelsea side, as I think Chelsea's biggest weakness is their defensive line. When you look at the rest of the pitch, it's quite, it's not clear and obvious, but it's the same with Barcelona, for example. Their weakest links is their defenders. And while Millie Bright is really good at heading and last-ditch defending, if you put her on a 1v1, I would take anyone but Millie Bright on that. not always, because she does, you know, she'll body you out and on the 1v1s and stuff. But like even against Man City, there was a few balls that went over. She tried to clear. I don't know what she did, but it just went over her head and they were in behind. So I think, and when you look at that and you look at, you know, Carter Ennick now, and it is still quite young, you can probably get at her, maybe intimidate her with a player like Vivian Miedema. Obviously, they know each other quite well. But you have Vaxenius and Beth Mead on 1v1s. Yona Anderson, again, not a great 1v1 defender, as Jesse probably agrees. So I think in these moments, I think a partnership like Viv in a 10 and Stina Blackstenius in that number 9 role could actually be really good. Have Viv take on the 1v1s, put Stina back into space, you know, whether it be the wingers out into space, I think it would actually be really smart. But who do you take out from the midfield? That's the other question. And then if Leah starts, then obviously that gives us a bit more freedom in the midfield. But then at the end, who do you take out in the midfield? Because then you have to balance a 6 and you have to balance another number 8 who would have to balance off Viv, because Viv, yes, she's going to drop in the defend, but she's not going to be a Kim Little, for example. So I think it would actually be good to start with it, but I don't know if it would be smart to kind of manage the game out. So we'll see.
Yeah, maybe this is a bit galaxy brain, but like if you assume that Chelsea start with a 4-4-2, Arsenal could do something similar, go 4-4-1-1, maybe instead of one of the wingers like Caitlin Ford and Nikita Paris, you could have kind of Jordan Nobbs on the left of a kind of, I guess, lopsided 4-4-2. But I think that would probably break up partnerships elsewhere and probably be a bit much for a game like this. I'd do it against Birmingham, personally. Arsenal are at home to Birmingham. They got Reading and then they got Birmingham at home as the next two WSL games. I'd definitely give it a go against Birmingham from the start, those two up front. I personally wouldn't do it here. I'd keep that in the back pocket as a plan B. But we'll see. He was fairly sheepish about it when I asked him today. Jess, if I come back to you, you referenced there that recently Emma, and this happened in the cup final as well, even though probably driven by Pernille Harder's fitness at the time, that we haven't seen as much of Harder, Kerr and Kirby together. I wondered whether you think that will continue and whether Emma will drop Jess Fleming in there or just play like a straight 4-4-2. How do you see Chelsea lining up for this?
Yeah, to be honest, I think based off the City game, I'd be really surprised if there was any changes, just because I thought it worked really well for Chelsea and it did almost everything they wanted to do. And generally, given Arsenal's defence probably being Arsenal's weakness as well, I think, you know, in the same way that there were players in City's defence that Chelsea were willing to try and target, although not hugely successfully, e.g. Ruby Mace, I think it would make sense for them to put Harder and Kerr up top again. I think this is mainly working out well for Emma right now, just because, as I said, I don't think Fran Kirby's like on the peak of her form at the moment. So I think definitely in the cup final, it would have been interesting if Harder had been fit, whether she'd gone for it. But I just generally think there's a feeling that Emma's picked up on from especially the Champions League run last year, that it's just all a bit too unbalanced to play all three of them against like very high level opposition. I just don't think it works. Slash, for it to work, you need to basically constrain one of those players to such an extent that what is the point of having them on the pitch? You may as well save them for, as we saw in the City game, to bring them on for the last 20 minutes. Now, again, I don't think Fran Kirby had her best last 20 minutes ever, but you can see what the idea was there, especially, you know, I think the wind had a big impact on that game. But if there wasn't for Chelsea to play the balls over the top for Kirby to run onto as the counter-attack, in fact, we saw Chelsea win against City and United at King's Meadow, basically doing that, scoring those exact goals last season. And I think that is like the general idea, is to have one of those players as the closer, and for now, just start with two of them.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder, in your opinion as well, Jess, like you said there, that you don't think Fran Kirby's been on top of her form the last month. How much do you put that down to like the absence of Sam Kerr and the breakup, I guess, of that partnership?
Yeah, I can't really figure it out, to be honest. I do think it's had an impact, because I think obviously they were such a duo, but I think also the fact that Harder's maybe been given a freer role has unsettled Fran in certain ways as well. I feel like when Harder and Kirby have started together as a two whilst Kerr has been away, there's been a bit of chopping and changing over who's been the kind of centre forward in that partnership. Initially, in some games, it was Harder. The West Ham Continental Cup quarterfinal, where Harder scored a hat-trick, she was really the one up top. All three of her goals are just like classic number nine goals. Like, it's not Peniel Harder, like, in this like amazing world-beating way at all. She's scoring tap-ins, which is great. And she's really good at that, for what it's worth. But then, you know, against Brighton, we actually saw Hayes shift that around, and Harder was the one kind of dropping back, picking up space, which again is kind of more what you think of her doing. But Kirby was the one then left up top. And really, that's just not her wheelhouse at all, especially against a team like Brighton. It was way easy for them to shut her down, and there wasn't anyone there to then like consequently win those balls and lay them off. But the only other thing that's like kind of struck me recently is, you know, we do think of Fran Kirby as a very generous player to play with. I think a lot of the time, you know, she is always willing to lay off the ball, to make that pass if she thinks it's a better goal scoring opportunity. But she is a player who's very good at shooting and very good at scoring, but recently it just seems like she's looking for that pass and she's forcing it, not because she thinks the opportunity is better, but because she just doesn't seem to be as convinced that taking the shot will be worth it. And to me, that just suggests that at the moment there's something going on there internally where she's just not on the same level of confidence that maybe we saw last season and at the very start of this season. I mean, you know, if you look at the underlying stats, Kirby is still like, for everything apart from goal scoring, which obviously like Kerr dominates, but like Kirby is still like Chelsea's number one in like the final third, whether you're looking at recoveries, dribbles, you know, passes. But it just feels like it's not quite clicking in the same way that maybe we've seen it do before.
Yeah, and I think Arsenal have experienced that with Viv Miedema, perhaps, and actually I think Viv's coming to the boil a little bit. I think something clicked in that second half against Brighton, and I think she's got that. Like, I spoke to Jonas about this, about like the positioning of her and when she drops off and when she stays up, and I think she's really started to grasp that in the last couple of games, and she's looked a lot more dangerous, and sometimes those things can impact players. Alex, I'm going to try and let's try and hammer out what we think the Arsenal lineup will be. What you think the Arsenal lineup will be, I'm not going to commit on that just yet. Let's assume, right, that Manu Zinsberger is in goal. That's unless there's something wrong with any of these players we don't know about. Manu Zinsberger in goal. Noel Maritz will play right back because she always plays right back. Katie McCabe is shockingly suspended. Last player in the world I'd expect to be suspended, but she is. So Steph Catley at left back. I think that's pretty straightforward. And if they're able to walk, Leah Williamson and Hafai Eli at centre half. So let's try and work out the midfield and the forwards. Who do you think will be the midfield three, assuming we play a midfield three, of course?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I've tried thinking about this. I really have. And I really do like Frida Manum in a Jonas Eideborn midfield. I just don't think she's been up to it lately. And because of that, I think I will start Leah Valti. But also because I think Leah Williamson knows how to play with Leah Valti quite well already. And it also provides us a bit of extra defensive, just solid defensive line in front of our obviously defensive line. So I think Leah Valti would be my go-to there. And then I think the other two,
one's going to be Kim, isn't it? Like, yeah, there's way Kim's not going to play.
It's just, yeah. I think it has to be Kim and Jordan. I think, Jesse, why are you laughing at me?
Just because I feel like I've heard like both of you have this like, you know, like mental wrangle over these four players like so many times this season. It makes me laugh.
It's terrible. I think it has to be Kim and Jordan. I think Jordan is getting back into really good form, and I think that could actually be really helpful in this match, particularly with overloading one of the fullbacks and the 1v1s and stuff. I think she can be really good. And Kim, I mean, she's always just going to be in the midfield. There's no saying about that. But I think it would be, again, something to have in the pocket to bring Frida Manum on. Because I think Frida Manum is, if we're down one goal, if we're drawing in the last 30 minutes, I think Frida Manum is a good player to come on. I think she brings on a lot of energy and a lot of attacking kind of momentum in the midfield that, you know, players like Leah Valti and a tired Kim Little or a tired Jordan Nobbs might not have anymore. So I think that's the midfield three, and have Frida Manum come on later on and maybe drop Viv in the 10, who knows?
I think my prediction is going to be, and I know we've talked about this midfield three not really working, I think it's going to be Leah Valti, who was outstanding against Manchester United, albeit she's been carrying a bit of an injury and she's been spared from the Switzerland squad because she's been carrying this foot injury for ages, but I thought she was Arsenal's best player against United. I think she'll definitely play. Obviously, Kim will play because Kim always plays. I think he'll start Frida. The reason I think he'll start Frida Manum is because in the last 20 minutes of the Manchester United game, he brought Frida on. And the thing is, I think everyone knows by now about Arsenal's like left-sided overload, that it's become almost predictable, particularly when we don't quite have the players to do it. So if Tobin can't start, for example, I don't think we really have the players to do it unless Katie McCabe or Tobin Heath is on the left, because like Beth is a different type of player. She's not a small space player. But when he brought Frida on, Frida was going right over to the right. And I think that was a bit of a sop because United knew to expect Arsenal's left side and they put all of their players over there. And when he brought Frida on, Frida was on the right, basically. And I think that was a kind of, okay, you figured out that we're going to go down the left, so let's try and create something on the right. And given, you know, Chelsea's probably their biggest weakness potentially is at left back. I think, for example, Jess Carter's been pretty great at right back. I think she's a really good, like, pure defender. Actually, I don't know if you've listened to Wrighty's House yet with the interview with Leah Williamson, but she bigged up Jess Carter a lot, said that she was, like, one of the best natural defenders in the country, like, one-on-one. And I agree with that. I think when you keep Lauren Hemp quiet, like you've got a lot of credit in the bank there. So I think he's going to go for Frida because I think he's going to want to try and maybe spring a bit more of a surprise and overload that right, whereas we know that Jordan likes to overload the left. So that's my prediction. What about your front three, Alex? Who do you think that will be?
I mean, ideally, if they're fit, obviously I would have Tobin Heath on the left, Viv centrally, and Bethmead on the right. I think that combination just works really well for the reasons that we all know, that, you know, small-sided, small-space player that Tobin is on the left side, Bethmead being able to cut in, go into space, make crosses once the ball gets switched over. And I actually thought about it also, whether I prefer Bethmead on the left or right, because it's two completely different players and two completely different game plans. Because when she is on the left, she is the player that runs into space, but she's also well capable of cutting back and taking a shot on target. On the right side, she still runs into space, but she has to work a bit harder to get on shot on goal, for example, when she's not crossing the ball. So, but if I had to pick, I think I would leave Tobin out on the left and keep Beth on the right, and kind of expect, one thing I do want to see from the front three against Chelsea is a bit more fluidity and movement like we have seen previously. I think they've been very static in the past few games, whether that just be a change in tactics from Jonas, a change in game plan or whatever it may be. But I do want to see them a bit more fluid in their positioning, and kind of not get stuck playing the same ball over and over again, and kind of make it predictable for Chelsea to defend. Because as weak as maybe a Jonas Andersen is, if you do the same ball over and over again, she's a smart enough player to pick up on it. So I would like to see them be a bit more fluid in the way they play with each other and the way they play with the midfield also.
Yeah, my front three prediction, I think Beth Mead will play on the left. I think Nikita Paris will start on the right and Vivian Miedema up front. I think the reason he'll do that is because I suspect that he doesn't think Tobin Heath can do 90 minutes. And given what we saw against Man City, for example, away, I think he'd rather Tobin finish the game than played like 45 to 60 minutes of it. And I'd kind of agree with that. So that's my prediction for the front three. And he'll look to bring Tobin and probably Stina Blackstinius on later in the game to try and make some impact there. And obviously there's Caitlin Ford as well, who could equally start this game instead of Nikita Paris. Maybe she starts on the left and Beth on the right. Nikita didn't get on against Manchester United, whether that was because she was being saved or because she's not playing that well, I don't know. We'll find out. But Jess, if I before we do our predictions, I just wanted to ask you, I guess, because we referenced it a little bit, you know, Chelsea did play at home to Manchester City on Sunday. You know, they got, it's doing them down, so they got over the line. They won 1-0. And what did you make of that game? Because like I said, me watching it, even when City came on top, and I you know, I'm not emotionally involved, so it's easier for me to say something like that, but I still just thought that Chelsea would get over the line. What was your kind of feeling watching the game?
Obviously, in those last 10 minutes, I was literally like watching from behind my hands, because I've seen City score those kind of equalizers so many times, and it was a very different kind of game, I think, for Chelsea. You know, obviously, in the past two seasons, we've played these kind of title deciders, like what we're talking about today, against City, and both of them have ended in draws, and both times City have like scored the equaliser, and fortunately it still worked out for Chelsea. But I was just like, this is so different, like we really need to get the 3 points here to put the pressure on Arsenal. But I also, you know, once I was kind of, you know, the game was done and I was taken out of it, I kind of agree with what you're saying, Tim. I never really felt like City had amazing standout opportunities. It more just felt to me like City could fluke a goal here, because City always fluke a goal here. And Ellen White always shows up and does something like stupid, and Millie Bright falls over, or Magda Eriksson somehow gets on the pitch and scores a ridiculous own goal in the 92nd minute, because that's what happens when we play City. But actually, when you take a step back, you know, I think Chelsea did in particular defend the box really well. And I think this will be interesting in terms of the Arsenal game. And especially when we're talking about, you know, Blackstinius and Miedema potentially playing together, is I wonder why, you know, the reason maybe not to start those two is because in terms of that stretch of space. I don't think Chelsea are necessarily going to offer that with Eriksen out of the game, because Brighton now are just happy to sit, really, and just like leave that space there and let everyone else go forward. And I've done a piece for Opta previewing the game, and we looked a lot at the differences between that first opening WSL game and the FA Cup final. And what's really interesting is in the first WSL game, Chelsea are like press, 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 high press on Arsenal, like really forcing them back. And obviously what Arsenal did was as soon as they broke the press, there was so much space to go into. And in the FA Cup final, Chelsea said, and okay, this is influenced by the fact that Kirby scores after 3 minutes, but Chelsea just said, okay, come at us. Like, we'll just give you the ball and we're going to sit here. And I think I'd be really surprised if Hayes goes back to the first approach rather than the second approach. And, you know, I think it was similar in the City game. It was just a feeling of like, okay, we're 1-0 up, we'll sit, we'll soak up the pressure. We don't need to do anything other than this. And for what it's worth, I thought the first half was really good. And, you know, one of the best games I've kind of, like, best halves of football I've seen Chelsea play this season. It would have been nice to maybe get an extra goal, but I think the conditions were tricky. But in terms of the way Chelsea's press was focused in terms of who they wanted for City to have the ball and who they didn't, it was just like to not let Lucy Bronze get the ball, basically. And it worked really well. And when Lucy Bronze doesn't have the ball, nothing much happens for City ultimately. And then, yeah, you had the Hemp Carter 1v1, which, yeah, Carter did really well. And I think it's really interesting. I was speaking to Omarvind on a podcast, and he was just saying like that what he thinks Jess Carter is really good at is if she's just given like one specific task. And I think that's so true. We've seen that throughout the season. I think we saw it with Viv in the FA Cup final. She just like followed Viv all over the pitch, and that was it. City, she just followed Hemp, and that was it. And what Carter can't do is do the like defend the space anchor kind of a defense and watch the runs. But I think whilst she's in a position where she's just like, okay, this is it, this is just your player to focus on. And, you know, I think whoever plays on Arsenal's left side, you know, whether that is Mead, Ford, Heath, that will just be her same kind of focus. So I think there was lots of positives for Chelsea to take away from the City game ultimately.
Yeah, that's really interesting about Jess Carter actually as well, especially given, you know, what I said about what Leah said about her as like a great one-on-one defender, kind of thou shalt not pass, great at getting her body in the way. And that's actually a really interesting observation as well about how, you know, about how Chelsea approached that game. And actually something interesting Jonas said in his press conference today, he said after the cup final, the mistake I made was I focused too much on Chelsea and not enough on us. Because he said, I felt like we were more advanced than we were, and that like we had our principles of play very clear. And he said, that was my mistake. I should have, particularly because the cup final came off the back of an international break and he didn't have much time with the players. He said, my regret is I should have focused more on what we were doing in that game rather than what Chelsea were doing. And, you know, so he said this week has been about, we've been focusing on what we're going to do. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think both managers are going to do, so, like you referenced there about cutting off Lucy Bronze. I think Michael Cox wrote a really great piece in The Athletic about how Chelsea overloaded on that side to do that to Lucy. And I think both coaches are going to try something that, like, at the moment none of us know about. And we'll only see it on match day. They're clearly targeting this player, or they're doing an overload here or something like that. So I think it's going to be fascinating tactically, but I'm going to ask you both, and I will, you know, put it on the line with a prediction as well. But I'm going to start with you, Alex. What's your prediction? You can be honest if you want.
I predicted this yesterday and I forgot what I said, but I feel different today. I'm going to go with a 2-1 win for Arsenal.
Okay. All right.
Ooh, well, she's feeling more confident today. I know what she predicted yesterday, and it wasn't an Arsenal win.
It wasn't that. It definitely was not that. I'm feeling a bit better today.
Before we go to you, Jess, I'm predicting a 1-1 draw. Mm. Maybe against my better judgment. I don't know. What one thing I guess that makes me think that is one thing Arsenal have been good at recently is coming back into games. So they got a late, you know, all right, it's Spurs. But they got a late equaliser against Spurs. They got a late equaliser away at City. They got an equaliser down to 10 players against Manchester United. Like, they have been able to kind of claw games back a bit in second halves, which is why, as much as I agree, Alex, like, if Arsenal go 1-0 down, and particularly early, I will get the fear. If Arsenal can keep it at 1-0, I could see Arsenal, like, scoring a late equaliser, particularly if they can bring players like Heath and Blackstenius in. And that's something we probably didn't have under Joe, that ability to bring on, like, you know, really top-class attacking talent. So I'm going to go with 1-1. Jesse, what's your prediction?
Well, for equality's sake, I'll have to go with the Chelsea win, won't I? You know, with the caveat that I will hate myself deeply if we don't win, after I've now said it on not one but two podcasts that I think we will win. I think the 5-0 at King's Meadow really hurts this team a lot still. And I think there's something specific about playing Arsenal at King's Meadow, which is just like an extra level for this side. And I think, you know, maybe that the problems that we saw over that, you know, December, early January period were Chelsea not really knowing how to to get to that extra level, maybe because the FA Cup like was so intense for them. Because I just think, you know, the Hayes-Idaval battle is fascinating. The battle between the two clubs is fascinating. The desire for Chelsea to kind of stay at the top of the domestic game, I think especially now we've gone out of the Champions League, I just think all of that is so intense for the club that I believe that I think they'll get it over the line.
Yeah, and to be fair, I've always said that I think Chelsea will win the league, just because I've always just felt like as a team they have that experience to get it over the line. So, and I think Arsenal are slightly earlier in that journey as a team, even though we've got plenty of players who've won the league and won World Cups and stuff like that. Like, as a unit, I always considered, you know, we did a mailbag episode last week and I said, like, I always considered at the beginning of the season being in the race, I would consider as progress. And then next year, really looking at, okay, we need to be more than just in the race. And you know, that sounds like me being a bit lily-livered and giving up, but I've always felt that Chelsea would take it this year. But then maybe next year when, you know, Jonas has done a bit more recruitment and got his players in, and, you know, that they'd have a better go at it then. But I mean, if this does finish a draw, which is my prediction, like, that really leaves the title in the balance. If Chelsea win, I think it's theirs, essentially. Jesse, you want to come in on that? Yeah,
I think regardless, I don't think this is done. I think it's a very neat narrative for, you know, I've bought into it. Obviously, Sky are buying into it. Everyone wants to buy into that this is the title decider. But we're in the middle of February, and I just think we've seen both of these sides kind of have their peaks and troughs. I think both of them are capable of putting together the, you know, consecutive wins to take them over the line if they need to. But it just feels like, you know, when we start throwing back in, you know, FA Cup games, the Continental Cup final, Arsenal are apparently still in this European competition, which I pretend doesn't exist now. You know, I still think there's more to come. You know, Chelsea have to play Spurs twice. It is disgusting to me that I have to take Spurs seriously as a team in this league now, but I feel like I do. Arsenal still have to play them. And Chelsea have United again on the last day of the season, and that could be really big for United if they're in up for the Champions League spot. So I'm really looking forward to the game, but I think whatever happens, there's still more to come.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And like, I've been like having this kind of idle thought recently about, like, I'd like Jonas to coach us for the big games, but then I'd almost like to get, like, just get Joe Montemurro back after Friday night, because then we've got everyone outside the top four, and, you know, just play Montemurro ball and beat them all 4-0. Just have like a hybrid coaching arrangement like that would be quite nice for Arsenal at this point. Alex, I might as well ask you what you know, I guess, do you see this as a title? Obviously, it's going to go at least some way to deciding. That's just the way it is. But how much of a title decide, quote unquote, title decided, do you see this as?
I agree with Jesse on this one, just because when we look at the past couple months, we see how inconsistent both Arsenal and Chelsea have been. And it's tremendously annoying because they can be consistently good just as consistently bad just one week to another. So I do agree that I think that although this will be kind of, it could be a title decider should everything go perfectly for the rest of the season, but will it be? I genuinely don't think so, because I agree that there are a lot of points to be dropped on either side. And the way that the season has been going, it seems more likely than not that Chelsea and Arsenal are going to drop points in another match. Sadly to think about, but I think it is going to happen regardless, whether it be personnel, whether it be fatigue, you know, injuries have, you know, we're getting to the last stretch of the season and injuries are going to be a lot more obvious now with the fatigue and the multiple cups coming up. You know, Chelsea have to worry about facing Man City in a final now. That's going to be big. You know, come the week after that, are they still going to be too high on from that final? Are they going to be too low from that final and not perform the next week? I think there are a lot of points to be dropped on both sides. And I don't think that they can kind of see it out after having these points from Friday. But I do think, I mean, regardless, it's going to be a big game and it's going to be a very, very important points for both sides, because obviously Arsenal can open a gap and Chelsea can get to the top and kind of know that they can remain there. But I think, yeah, I think it's not going to be the ultimate decider. I think there is going to be, it's going to come down to kind of the last few weeks, I think.
Yeah, fair. So what we're rooting for is Chelsea to win the Conte Cup and then have a dodgy month after that, like they did after the FA Cup. And, you know, we go from there. I'd sign up for that. Anyway, this has been a really interesting discussion. Really good preview for the game, I think, which, to remind everyone, takes place on Friday evening at King's Meadow, 7:45 p.m. kickoff. It is actually sold out. Which is fantastic as well, albeit I know quite a few Arsenal fans have been caught out by that and not been able to get tickets, because the concept of WSL games selling out a week in advance is quite novel. But, you know, really, really great that it's sold out. And I think on a Friday night, I think it will get a really, really good, really good kind of viewing figures on TV as well. But nevertheless, are both of you going to the game?
We are, yes.
Or even having a drink before to
We're in opposite stands, unfortunately, so we won't be together for the game itself, which may be for the best.
It might be for the better.
Yeah. I my accreditation came through today, so I'll be sitting there being all nice and neutral as usual. But anyway, that's the game on Friday. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you're shitting yourselves as much as we are. But nevertheless, that's a preview of Chelsea Arsenal. We just thought that a game like this deserved that kind of treatment. To be honest, we know we brought out the mailbag episode last week, but you know, it's Chelsea Arsenal. We had to go big on this, and obviously there's an international break after that, so we'll probably come back with another mailbag episode maybe at the end of February, beginning of March, something like that, and we'll try and organise something else for March as well. Maybe ahead of the North London Derby at the Emirates, massive week in March, where Arsenal have Wolfsburg, Tottenham, Wolfsburg, and two of those games at the Emirates. So we'll see if we can do something, get a player or two on ahead of that. But thanks very much for listening. Thanks very much for downloading. As ever, we're enormously grateful for every listener, and we'll speak to you again in a couple of weeks. Thanks very much, and goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.